a Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Oh, great to have you with me, Aaron Noonan here. Great to have you along. V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco. Another edition dropping your way. This one is part two of my two-part chat with Adam Macro. Now, if you've heard part one, you know that we talked about what he's doing now, his open wheeler career, and his early times in V8 supercars. If you haven't heard part one, go and have a listen to it, come back and listen to part two, because this part will make a whole pile more sense. Now, if you listen to part one and you want to know what's on part two, this is what's on part two. We're going to go deeper into his time in V8 supercars, particularly his winning association with Howard Racing in the development category. More assaults on the Bathurst 1000, and he also answers the National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions and tackles the top 10 shootout. Now, I think you'll enjoy this one. So buckle up. It's time to start part two of Adam Macro on the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco. So we do the FPR Enduros with Menu 04.
Menu 04, yeah.
So for 2005, though, you end up with a full-time drive in the development series. So
correct.
Howard Racing was a team in Queensland that Canadian expat Mark Howard, who was in property development in Queensland, had started doing the development series a few years earlier with some of the old Paul Wheel AU Falcons.
Correct.
And we mentioned earlier about the Briggs cars. Late 03, 888 acquire that team.
Yep.
The cars that were built and raced in 03, they never raced again with 888 because they went and did their own thing.
Correct.
They basically turned them into show cars for the next year.
Yep.
But come 2005, they're both now in Howard Racing's hands, and they got better electric on them. They look and smell like 888 cars. How does this whole deal come to be?
As I said, I think I'm 100% sure that that Alain had made a call and said this kid's good.
So was this directly tied to the 888 endurance drive for that year?
It was all it was all sort of intertwined together. It was like, yeah, come and drive Super 2 development series,
same thing,
and then do the enduros with 888. That was
so
always
really
the deal.
Is it really a case of you've got a 888 deal and they get plate? You get placed.
No, it wasn't. It was more of a Howard Racing deal with a 888 co-drive. I just remember Mark ringing me up and going, "Did I ring him? I can't remember which way it went." But he's like, "Would you like to come and? Would you like to come and drive a, with us for next year?" And I said, how did it go? I remember it was quite. I said, "No, you give me this opportunity, I'll win you a championship." I went hard.
Wow, were all in.
No,
there.
All in. I said,
because you were sitting at the point going,
I've got nothing to lose. Yeah. So I said, "You give me the right car, I'll win the championship." And he's like, "Okay, then, no worries. We'll get your bags and I'll see you next week." Like, it was that quick. It was come now. just packed up and left, and he actually had an apartment, which is at Turn 1 Chicane at In-Service Paradise. So we stayed there, lived there for the first year and did the first year, and everything was going great until we got to Melala.
I was going to I only just thought of this because I found the photos the other day. We're working on a book for next year that tells the history of all the 888 race engineering cars, including those two Briggs cars that started things off.
Yeah.
So in 05, you and Mark are in these, and the way to distinguish those cars from the 888 cars was the yellow interior.
Yellow roll cage,
the better electrical colours really stood out.
Yeah.
But I remember you got absolutely pulverised at Malala.
Correct.
But didn't. Had you caught on fire? There was an engine that had
Gone. So I think we were – I think we ended up – well, Adelaide was the first round. We come, I think, second. I think it was second or something there. And then we had
this is being operated as an independent
– Correct.
Team, racing.
Really had not much to do. There was no 888 real parts or engines or anything. Like Craig Haystead was doing the engines for us at that time. Warren Davis was a team manager who I caught up with not long ago. Haven't spoken to him, but it was good to catch up with him. I think it was going well. I think we were second in the championship, possibly leading the championship by the time we got to Malala.
Didn't go back that far.
I think we were pretty close.
Anyway, Dean Canto was DJR. Warren Luff was there. You were there.
Yeah, I'd had some bad luck. Anyway, and I'm pretty sure I was I think I was sitting in the reverse grid race or something. I think I was sitting second or – and I was just cruising. I think it was behind Dale Breed.
Oh, he was doing a one-off for Brad Jones race.
Correct, yeah. And the oil line came off, straight off the thing, and I saw the smoke, and I was on the radio going, "What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Can I try and limp it back? We can get it going." I'm thinking the championship, you know, and down the back straight, and as I turned in, Tony D'Alberto had hit the oil and gone straight into the side, into the driver's door, straight into the driver's door, and the car was like a banana. Mm. It was a big hit.
Is it the biggest crash you've ever had?
No, I had a bigger one in 06 when I went in at turn 8.
At Adelaide?
On oil.
Uh-huh. Mm. It's a common theme here. Your oil or someone else?
Bloody oil. No. It was P2. We just put good tyres on to do a bit of a quali run and see what the balance is like on some better rubber. I'd done my out lap and I was on my quick lap, turned into turn 8, and I remember the car oversteering and I caught it and then it understeered and I went straight in. Oof. Well, it was a glance. It was a 45-degree glance, which is obviously there's no really good result come out of that. But, and then I found out that someone's diff had blown up the car that had just got – I didn't see the smoke or anything like that, and there was no flags. So that was – we fixed the car and we still won the round, luckily.
Yeah, well, that started. Yeah. So
late, but I remember 05, there was like 2 inches of washers on the passenger side door brackets to try and get the door out far enough so it all lined up, and it was the boys did a mega job and got it back out again. And I remember we pinched shocks out of the 888 show car, because that was a 888 car. 888, so it was
whatever it took. So we sort of zipped.
Sorry,
where am I back? But no, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
So you get absolutely hammered.
Yep.
There. And I think then after that they got their hands on a 888 car.
Yeah, so
it, didn't they?
It was, to be brutally honest, even though it ruined our championship that year, that crash, it was a blessing in disguise, because we'd always planned to go – well, there was already the Chassis 7, which is Ludo's first ever chassis that he built.
Which Mark was racing.
Which, no.
No. It was
just sitting there. Sitting I think around. That was the plan for 06 or whatever it is. So we bought that. The car was – they did fix that car, that Briggs car, and I think Stones bought it. I remember them coming to the shop to pick it up, because I remember shaking it down after it was repaired, or maybe – yeah, I can't remember exactly. Warren Davis is your man to find out that. But I remember, it was a blessing in disguise, because we bought that car on earlier than what we – if we hadn't crashed that car, we would have run that all year and then rolled out possibly 06 with the new car. But we bought that car in early, and I'd done – we did Phillip Island.
And Bathurst as well.
Bathurst as well. Mm. And I think we won Phillip Island, the Phillip Island round, the first round in that car. And then Bathurst, the car was great. The engine didn't really have enough power. And Phillip, horsepower is king, you know. And we had full-spec DJR cars with the big engines in them. And I think we were fourth or fifth or something like that at Bathurst. But it was a blessing in disguise, because I had a couple of rounds in that car to get that sorted and get it really nailed. And then 06 just hit the ground running.
Nailed it, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
So 100%. You won the last round 05, but then you won the first five in a row in 06.
Yeah. Yep.
So that record, 6 round wins in a row, has only ever been done once.
Correct.
Since then.
Yeah.
Andrew Thompson for 888 in 2011.
Yeah.
So you were in the record books on your own there for about 6 years or 5 years, and then Tomo joined you in there. And in 10-odd years since, no one's been able to do that again. So
no, we nailed it.
Why did that work in 06? What clicked right for that to all happen?
I think, obviously 05, I drove with Stephen and we ended up third at Bathurst, on the podium at Bathurst. So that was a big confidence boost. I think everything was gelling really well. Great relationship with my mechanic. Andrew Simpson, who's a Triple Eight now. Yeah. We still talk. You know, when he needs Hyundai, when he was building Hyundai's, he was calling me all the time. So he was awesome. And you know, when everything just gels and the tuning, we got the car just better and better and better and better. And it was a beautiful car. Ludo's an absolute genius. So we were very fortunate to have that. And everything just went well. And there's no real one thing that you could say, oh, this is why, you know. We certainly didn't have the best engine in the field. We had a reliable engine, but it was okay. But it certainly wasn't up with the two Jack Daniels cars with Jack
Perkins and Shane Price.
Price, they were full spec cars. But our chassis and I think also one of the things that really helped me was my technical side to really understand how to get speed out of the chassis and work with the engineers. Basically, between my mechanic, my engineer, and myself, it was like three of us could all sort of really work hard and get more speed out of it. We'd ring someone at 11 o'clock and, let's try this. Yeah, let's try this. Let's try that. So, yeah, it was very good.
Is that a scenario where are you getting paid to do this, or is it not costing – you're not paying to do it so it works out right?
So I was very, very lucky, and probably not many people can say this, but I never actually paid for a drive all my career. All the endurance drives I got paid. I was 2000 when I was at JFR, wouldn't have got paid. No, I didn't get paid at Longhurst or at JFR. I was an employee anyway, so I was getting my weekly wage there. And I was working at Howard's, so I was basically getting some money by working there. But I was also looking after Mark's two kids. Jack and Sam in go-karts. So I was running them in go-karts, and that's how AMR Motorsport started, was by running them. And before you know it, I was building engines and in the shed and for other people and had a business, and that's how all that started.
Yeah.
So that flowed on.
It's funny how it all clicks together.
It's bloody weird, isn't it? Crazy. And, you know, so I was at the go-kart track every weekend watching a young Chaz Mostert smash everyone, like from day one. Freak.
Before he started dyeing his hair too, back in those days. Or was he starting on that, was he?
No, I don't think he did.
No mohawks when he was a kid.
He wasn't – he was cheeky. Nothing's changed. Very, very good kid.
We didn't gloss over it. We sort of just skipped over it, but I was always intending to go back. So the 888 co-drive in 05 with Steve Ellery, fifth at Sandown, third at Bathurst. So you scored 888's first Bathurst 1000 podium. Now, they've got very good at it over the years of 100%. Being on the podium with 100%. One and sometimes two cars over there. What do you remember about that whole deal and driving for 888, dealing with RD, those particular races, how that all came to be?
Pretty straightforward and no nonsense.
So had Menu called them to say, hey, give this bloke a go?
I think that sort of happened at the end of 04 after when I drove with Alain, and I think he'd made a call and help me out. So it was all pretty straightforward. I think there was no real, hi, we'd like you to come and drive for us, and this is what we'll pay you, and you'll do this, and we'll do this, and contract, and away we went, and just got our head down and worked and tested and just went through the motions. There was no issue. Craig was there. I knew Craig well, so he was good help. I was actually supposed to drive with Craig, but it never happened.
It's funny that you say this because I had a chat with Mr. Ellery earlier, and he was under the impression that he was going to drive with Craig.
Yeah. So
I've got two blokes now who are saying they were going to drive with Craig who didn't drive with Craig.
Yeah. Vaguely recall I might have even been at Malalar when we crashed, Craig ringing me going, oh, I don't think you're driving with me. I could be wrong. It could be just blurry. It's, what is it now, 17 years ago. So, but there was a chance that possibly that was on the cards, but it didn't happen and it worked out well. It was awesome driving with Steve. I'd known Steve all my life. He was racing at Oakley go-kart track when I started, so So we knew them very well, and yeah, we just got the job done and kept it clean. The car did not have one scratch on it when we got it back. So that was our plan. Like, if someone comes up behind us, it's quicker, you let them go, run our own race. I think we were doing low nines pretty much every lap all day. And obviously a famous crash and lots of stuff. And
that helped get rid of a few.
Got out of it. Yeah, exactly. So it was, I remember having great dice with Todd Kelly in the HRT car. Obviously Jamie at the end of the stint, end of my stint. It was just one of those days where everything sort of come together. Mm. Obviously we didn't win, but for me third was – I hadn't finished one.
Oh, I was going to say, you hadn't finished one until that one.
No, I'd had a terrible run, and I wish I could say it was my fault, but it wasn't. You know, it's sort of unfortunately I'd had a bad luck with, you know, whether it be car mechanical failures or co-drivers crashing. Mm. So – unfortunately, it was just nice to finish one, to be really honest.
Get one on the
board. Let alone be on the podium. Because I think I'd done, well, by then, how many did I done? Six, seven?
Oh, yeah, the two in 98, the Honda and the Falcon. Yeah. There's two. Longhurst 99, JFR 2000, Larry 01, Mist 02, FPR 03, FPR 04. So you're up to your eighth start by the time you finished
one. I hadn't even finished one, yeah. Right. And it was frustrating. Because we were always in a fairly good position, you know. Most years we'd done pretty well, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's what it is.
So you win the 06 Fujitsu Series, as it was called back then.
Yes.
So you're thinking, this is my opportunity, I'm reinflated, I've just put another thing on my resume that, you know, these are the cars that they run in the main championship, or are you going, even when I do this, it still doesn't matter?
By then... Yeah, well, I thought, I couldn't have done any more. I certainly did speak to as many teams as I could, but they all wanted budget. Mm. Even though I'd achieved that, I still wanted budget, and I didn't have any. Mm. So
very simple conversations.
Simple conversations, very simple. And it's, it was never, bring $100,000 and we'll give you a drive. It was more $1 million, you know. So, at that stage in my mind, it was $1 million. It's just out of the question. It's that's not going to happen, you know. As I said, I'd do things differently next time. I'd hire someone or try and do something differently. But there was a certain part of me that wanted to just get a drive on, because I was a good driver,
on merit,
rather than just paying for it. If you know what I mean, but. I wasn't aware of how much of a business it was, and I thought winning, but I just, yeah, my mind was thinking completely differently to how the teams thought. You know, I thought winning was everything. You're a race team. That's what you'd, when you have a race team, you're out to win. And obviously we all know that that's not necessarily the be-all end-all in terms of, you know, they all want to win, but they've got to get sponsors first and do the best they can with the budget that they have at hand.
So for 06, you drive with Britec?
Yeah, with Luffy, yep.
So were you told there's just no room at 888? Thanks, but sorry, we haven't got a spot?
I don't remember the conversation. I just never really got asked back.
And sometimes that's just circumstances. It might be the
driver is 6 foot and I'm short. Like there is factors, and I did, obviously I rang 888 every year, and you'd be like, oh no, it's fine, but look, the driver that we've got probably not suited in size. We'd have to have a difference. It's just too tricky for driver changes. And back then, driver changes had to be quick.
Mm.
Like you were borderline struggling to. But it was before, I think, they slowed the fuel filling down.
Yeah, they did.
You had full tank would be like 11 seconds or something. Like, they had them cranking those fuel. So you had to get in so fast. And I think they slowed it down so that there wasn't –
Minimise
the safety, the rush. But I'm pretty sure 07, Roland rang me and offered me a drive.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, no, he did. 100% he did.
So in 07 – they had Lowndes and Wink up in the main car and they brought back Alan Simonson and Richard Lyons.
Correct. So I got offered that, obviously not with, I would have been with Simonson, been or car, yeah. I would have been with, probably with Simonson.
Yeah.
I said no.
Why did you say no?
Because there was a potential full-time opportunity with Britec.
Right.
And I sort of said to Roland, thanks, but no thanks. But I, so I'd already signed.
Late 06?
I'd already signed
with
Britec.
For the next year.
For the next year. I'd already done a deal. This was must be middle or early 07 maybe. I can't remember exactly. Mm. And I sort of said, look, I've signed. But thanks, but I know that I know I'm not going to get a full-time gig with Triple Eight.
Yeah.
As much as winning Bathurst would have helped that, possibly. But there's – even if there was a 10 or 20% chance with the full-time drive at Britec, I need to sort of pursue that to try and get in the next day. I can't, you know. So probably a bad decision, but – you never know. It could have gone.
Could have worked out.
It could have rolled out. I could have gone and won Bathurst with Triple Eight, or I could have gone and got a full-time drive, which is what I wanted at the end of the day more than anything, was to have just one season in the car. Because, you know, you step out for 9 months and then you do one test day, you get 20 laps, you get 30, 40 laps every year, like, and you still go okay. It's like, imagine if
which I was quite amazing thing. For a lot of the guys who do the Enduros only.
And, you know, and it's like, imagine if I did this
all the time.
All the time. Like, you know, it would be
dangerous.
It's just fast, you know. It'd be heaps better. So it's probably – no one probably knew that until now.
No, are we?
So I knocked back RD. I knocked back RD, which I probably shouldn't have. But then there was my reasoning, I think, was good. You know, I think that there was a chance. It might have been a slim chance, but there was spoken about. And never came to fruition, unfortunately. Mm. I mean, the GFC, that stuffed everything.
Yeah, that really hit a lot.
Hence the fact I never drove again after that.
Which was, was your last Bathurst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you did the Britec deal for 06, so you drove with Luffy.
Yep.
The Howard thing, did that just naturally end at the end of 06? Because you said you were going to win the title and you won the title.
Yeah, so.
Job done.
I went back home. I was living on the Gold Coast. So I went back home and started my go-kart business.
Mm.
Just kept doing that.
You got a call up though. As long as your whole career with Main Game Supercars is endurance co-drives.
Correct.
Two driver races.
Yeah.
Except one weekend you got your own V8 supercar.
Did.
You remember?
I did, yes.
Did you have to put on an accent to drive for Team Kiwi?
Hey, bro.
But Jet.
Yeah, exactly. No. I was lucky enough to get the call up to do that with the Team Kiwi.
Which was Adelaide 07.
Late 07, yep. Great opportunity, good car. Mega car.
Well, it was an FPR car.
Mega car.
It was black car, but it was an FPR car.
Yeah, it was a full I went to FPR to get the seat fitting, and obviously I'd been at FPR.
And did they pick you because you'd been there before?
I don't necessarily – he just rang me. I don't know exactly why they chose me.
Because Paul Radisich wasn't ready because he was still –
he had that massive crash at Bathurst and he was injured. Yeah. And, I was hoping to get another race, but he got better too quick.
The Kiwi bones mending.
It was a very last minute deal. I remember I hadn't driven or trained for a long time because I wasn't doing Super Tour or anything like that. And I remember about 2 weeks out, come to Melbourne, seat fitting, let's do this. Okay, cool. So back to the gym, flat out, and especially Adelaide 500.
I was going to say of all the events,
and went and did a seat fitting, and I drove the car for the first time at Adelaide, hadn't driven that car, and they were a very different car to drive, the FPR cars compared to Triple Eight. So, And just one of those weekends where I just worked with the engineers, and we just got better and better, and I think we ended up 15th or something, which isn't too bad, considering I didn't know the car that well, and just got it better and better and finished both races. And if you have a look – I was actually second quickest on the lap times in the second race. I'd point that out.
We'll look that up on Matt Soft. FYI. But we trust you.
FYI. No, no, it's on Matt Soft. It's there.
We'll find it.
But, so the second race on the Sunday really hit, got the car right, tuned it up, and it was really quick, really quick. And I felt really comfortable because I just had that seat time, 250K, go and recover and then come back again. And first time I'd used a cool suit, oh, heaven.
What's this?
Yeah, what's this? Exactly.
Yeah.
See, I'd never used a cool suit ever in any of the races. So that was a nice thing.
Mm.
And it was an awesome car, awesome team. I did hit the wall in qualifying.
Qualifying.
It was just a little bit.
Have a go.
Just didn't get it right and just snagged a wall.
Yeah.
But that was okay. Didn't qualify very well. But as I said, I was still only just learning the car. And then by the time we got to Sunday and I'd had my head around the car, we were fast. And it was a great opportunity. And at least I did get that one race.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was actually more frustrating. I was like, oh, I want more of that.
I just got a taste.
Yeah.
So later that year, you drive with Jason Bright, who by that stage, he had had his team going for a few years.
Yes, correct.
But he had been driving at FPR.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In Pro 7, he actually came in. The Bright came to Bright Tech.
Correct.
To actually drive there. So
correct.
I think Alan Gurr was the other car that year. So you and Jason drove the Fujitsu car together. And I have a really fond memory of that race because Bathurst particularly – well, it was actually Sandown. Am I right in remembering that Brighty didn't pump the pedal and went off at the end of the straight when he got in the car? I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Possibly.
He took over from you.
Yep.
And there was a bit of a hurry-flurry coming into the pits.
Philip Island that year.
Ah, Sandown. It was the last year of Sandown before they went to Phillip Island.
Oh.
Yep.
What year was Phillip Island?
And he got in the car and hadn't pulled your seat insert out. So I think as you'd come in, you might have got a bit on a weird angle and there was some other team's gear in the way. And he gets to the end of the first – down of the first corner and didn't pump the pedal. Off the road in the sand. But Bathurst is the one we want to talk about.
That's a cracker.
So as a young Channel 7 pit lane reporter, I'm sent in because Grant Denyer's in the race, so I get the spot for the third pit lane commentary role.
Yes.
Or reporter, whatever you want to call it. I saw the video the other day. So this is 15 years ago.
Did you interview me?
Yeah.
Ah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, someone always sends it to me every year when they play it on the Bathurst.
Yeah.
They always bring that one up.
So for those who don't know the story, we'll paint the picture. 07 was later in the race there was weather coming. It was coming. It was just a case of when and how much. At that point, Jason's in your car.
Yep.
And he's in the lead because the way it's all panned out with all the pit stops, he's trying to get it to the point where he runs out of fuel as the weather arrives so he can do his fuel, go to wets, and come out in the lead.
Just like, not quite enough water.
Not quite enough. But he comes on in, and I remember Crompo going ballistic about, if you go find the tape, he's right. You know when he's right up on the call?
100%.
It was one of those moments.
He was getting passionate about it.
I don't know if we'd already had the Mark Winterbottom surf off through the sand, if that was before or after, but there was heaps going on. I think it was a bit after. But basically, the planets all nearly align here. Every driver has a I coulda, woulda, shoulda won Bathurst but didn't year. 07 is the year for you too.
100%.
So.
And they put cold tyres on the car instead of hot tyres.
Well, you couldn't heat tyres.
No.
So,
exactly.
So the point was he came in, he needed fuel.
Yeah.
The rain hasn't quite arrived, but it's pretty close. So to go to wets was too early. To go to new slicks, they're cold on a cold track, should have gone with the used warm tyres. Because
probably,
he popped back out third in the safety car queue.
But Scafey and I think Russell, they both crashed at the same time as us on hot tyres.
Yeah, yeah.
So that probably
negates that.
Did it rain heavier after that? I think I've deleted after that.
Yeah, it did. It did, but it didn't.
It wasn't enough for wets, though, was it?
Greg Ritter went wets
in
the second GRM car.
Okay.
And it wasn't quite enough.
It's just that annoying.
That sort of that cutting edge of the lap times between dry and wet.
Yeah.
It was still another couple of seconds the wrong side. If it tips down more, he skates through them all and he and McLean probably win the race.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But it wasn't enough. It was just enough to be slippery, dicey, but if you had heat in slicks, you sort of had to stick with it.
100%.
No one was going to blink and pit.
No. Yeah. Exactly right. So, yeah, could have, would have, should have that one.
Mm.
I remember Jason going into the pits. He's like, oh, sorry, mate. I said, mate, it could have been worse. He's like, how could that be worse? I said, I could have been driving. And I'm still, even though I never really got a full-time gig, I'm still very, very lucky to have, you know, had the opportunities that I got without paying a cent. Mm. Not many people can say that, yeah, totally. Unfortunately. And to drive with, you know, some of the caliber of drivers that I've had to, had the pleasure of driving with and the big teams, and you know, absolutely no regrets at all. You know, it's very, very lucky.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
So when you drove with Bridie again in 2008.
Correct.
I think you finished 9th.
Yep.
So that's the second time that you finished a race. Out of 11. That and the podium.
Yep.
Just goes to show that place is so mean.
Just nasty. Yeah, absolutely. Frustrating. But Bathurst. Yeah, this is that's Bathurst.
Yeah. So when you got out of that car in 2008 and left Bathurst that day, did you know or feel or think that that would be the last time there?
No.
Yeah.
No. I thought I'd probably be with Britec again.
Mm.
And they told me I'd be there. But I think financially things went down. Because
Britec, the team had closed, but Jason took the franchise to run a Stone Brothers car.
I'm not, you know more than I do.
Yeah, for 09.
In that terms. Yep. But, I thought I had a drive there, and I think financially they must have been struggling. And this could all be completely wrong. This is my opinion. Mm. And then they ended up going with someone that paid some money.
Carl Reindler was the driver who drove with Jackson for the Enduros.
Who was that?
Carl Reindler.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm pretty sure he'd given them some money and they needed it. So, yeah. But I was too late for me to, there was no other drives. So I was out.
Yep.
And that was it.
And then I guess after that, you stopped calling people, they stopped calling you, and that was that.
Yeah. I did tested with Murphy, Greg Murphy's Tasman. Team. Tasman.
Yeah, right.
I did a test with them.
I don't even remember that.
Early, no, it was Secret Squirrel, mate. No, I did a test with them, possibly thought about doing a Super 2, Super 2 deal to drive their car. So I did a day at Winton with them and it went really well, tuned the car up. And they're like, bloody hell, you've got the setup nailed, you know. So that was really good. And I think probably the last supercar I drove.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think I got to the point too, my wife at the time was pregnant and I'm like, I'm living on rations. I'm just working enough to pay the bills. Maybe it's time for me to focus on the family and go and get a proper job and earn some money and support my family with kid coming along and that. I think that's probably what it was. Like, done this for 10 years, getting old. I was no lack of not wanting to.
Yeah.
I think I just, basically just said, time to man up and do what's right for the family. And I just went go-karting and looked after that. And
do fun stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fun, hard work.
Yeah, karting. All working fun.
Mate, 365, 7 days a week, that sport, I tell you. Yeah. It's crazy. Absolutely.
You have raced a little bit of other stuff along the journey, though, because maybe you made a one-off in V8 Utes.
Correct.
Were you mad?
Must
have been. Sydney Olympic Park, you go and do a one-off in the V8 Utes with 31 other crazies.
Yes. Yeah, no, I did. Jesus. I remember that. That was interesting. I think actually I think I qualified eighth.
I think you qualified ninth.
Ninth. There you go. I was close. Memory's
good. Pretty good.
Not too bad. But I remember the team saying to me, I can't even remember the team saying to me, now just stay off the curbs because you'll break the shock absorbers, because every time you hit a curb because of Commodore or Holden, the shocks would break. So yeah, I think I was like 19th in quali. They're like, nah, P19.
So you hit a curb.
And I'm just like, you know what?
I'm going to send it.
Absolutely. I'm just going to send it. And sent it. And I think the lap after the quali lap, I'd had to idle around and there was smoke pouring off the front guard and she was all broken.
At least you knew what had happened.
But, yeah, exactly. And I was watching the four guys go straight over the curbs, no issue, but the Commodores couldn't cop it. So, and that was a great track. Good fun. But – yeah, it rewarded bravery and rewarded curb
and action
and suspension pieces and stuff. But I don't know whether – I don't think I sort of after that was like, oh, I want to do that again. They weren't the best thing to drive. Bit of fun. Bit of opportunity.
What about racing a Viper in the 12-hour, which is 2018? That's cool.
That was good. Yeah. That was really good. Good fun. And I it was nice to come back and go, can I do it? Can I still go all right, you know? And it was been 10 years since I'd driven something quick, you know. And I remember the first day we tested at Phillip Island, I think I was in Star Trek. It was just blurry. and that thing was quick. Like I had 800 horsepower.
Oof.
And it was fast and the torque from the Viper V10. But I remember after after maybe one session, everything sort of just slowed down. I come back and I was like, oh, let's get stuck into it. And it all just came back and it was like I never left after 10 years. Mm. And, you know, I remember we were limited to 206s with that car.
Because it was invitational. Car, yeah.
And we didn't get a massive amount. Obviously, there was three drivers. So we didn't get a massive amount of time in the car before the race. But in the first stint, the dash on the car had a predictive lap time. So it was like you're currently on a X, so that we didn't go under that 206. I remember coming down to the last corner and it was like 4.9.
Oops.
And I'm like, because I just came faster and faster. And I remember going to the guys, the car's misfiring, it's misfiring. They're like, you're on the traction control, because it had traction control. It had every Motec whiz bang, everything was set up in it, because obviously it was Richard's car. Mm. And yeah, I was on the traction control, and so I had to change that. And we just kept getting faster and faster and faster, and the thing was a jet. Was
just fast. Getting very good at slowing down for the last quarter.
Yeah, I had to keep slowing down. But we had to catch up, because I think in the first stint we'd had a fuel pressure regulator fail, so we were way behind. So it was we had to try and unlap ourselves, and the engineer was like, keep it safe but send it. So, didn't have any issues. I think in the end the front splitter failed and we couldn't keep the thing on the ground.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was just didn't have enough to keep the thing, so we had to pull the pin, unfortunately.
Park that one up.
Park it up. Amazing car, and it was good to get back at Bathurst. It's always good to go to Bathurst.
Yeah, true. Speaking of Bathurst, that's where the National Motor Racing Museum is situated.
Correct.
And they present our Couch Racer questions, where fans get to ask
Look
questions.
Out. Here we go.
Did you peruse these on the
no,
socials?
No, I thought I'd just surprise me. I had a look at a couple.
Yeah, but okay. So you're probably ready for a couple of these.
Couple of these, probably.
So Adam Laws. Now, Laws is an ex-Britec guy.
Yes.
He would like to know, can you explain why you became known as Mint in your Britec days?
Oh. Obviously, I kept saying it's Mint. Everything was Mint. I still do now. my wife, she's like, oh, bloody Mint.
It's the buzzword.
Yeah, it must be Mint.
If it's good, it's good.
I was actually thinking, because we were doing driver training practice at Britec one day, and I must have put my hand on the roll cage to pull myself out of the car in driver change practice, and my finger got caught on the bracket for the rear view mirror.
Oh.
And I've still got the scar.
You did too.
And it sliced the whole side. Blood all over the car, blood through the shop. And I was thinking maybe they started. I was probably, that's mint. Maybe it was from that.
No, even when things weren't good, all they good. Were still
just give me some electrical tape, and we'll keep giving driver change practice. But yeah, I'm not sure exactly why, but obviously, I still say, no.
You're a regular user.
Yep.
Jordan Northcutt, what do you see as your greatest achievement in supercars? Is it the Fujitsu title, or your Bathurst podium, or is it something completely left field?
Oh, Jesus, that's a tough one. They're nearly on par, I reckon.
Mm.
I mean, winning the Super 2 Championship's great, but then being on Bathurst podium, like, you can't – not many people get that opportunity to stand on the podium at Bathurst.
Mm, true.
So, yeah, they're very, very close, and it's hard to split the difference in terms of achievements. And I think the achievement was being able to do 10 Bathursts and do it on merit, So I think that's an achievement in itself as well.
For sure. Michael Burson asks, Bathurst 2005, what could have happened without the gearbox issue? Because there was a gearbox issue.
There was. Yeah. So we just kept popping out of gear. So going down the S's a couple of times, it threw itself into first.
Yeah.
I went down there sideways a couple of times. Absolutely, that definitely hurt us that day. It happened really early in my stint. I remember maybe 5 or 10 laps in, it started popping out. So we were holding it in gear as we were going down the hill.
So is this what, from second to first?
Pretty much. So quite. If you're in second gear, you had to be careful because the G-force under brakes would make it pop into forward, throw it into first. So the dogs are average. So, yeah, could have, would have, should have again.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's got it.
Yep.
David Haddon. Pineapple on pizza, wars have started for less than this. So pineapple on pizza, yay or nay?
Yay.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Goes
I don't
right.
see what's wrong with it. Brock Gain, highest and lowest point of your career?
So once again, Bathurst podium, Super 2, highest. Mm-hmm. Formula 4 championship was massive as well. I mean, that was my first ever one in cars. So that was very important to launch. And that was the catapult for my career, I suppose, winning that championship, being able to get the drive with Longhurst and everything. Lowest point? I got to say I don't have many points where I go, oh, you idiot. Because I don't want to sound cocky, but I didn't make too many mistakes, to be brutally honest, in terms of crashing or anything like that. Lowest. I don't really have one. I don't have a point where I sit there and go, that was absolutely dumb. Like, I don't know. Crashing on the last lap when you're in front or something like that. I don't really have any major lowest point.
Yeah.
I'm pretty very positive person, so I sort of stick to the positives. But yeah, not really very many negatives.
Thomas Harton, who was your hardest opposition in karting?
Karting? There's a lot of them.
Who was your biggest rival?
James Sarah.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's still racing these days. So he was in juniors, was always me and him crashing into each other. There was another kid, but I can't remember his name. Can't remember. But yeah, mainly probably James. Probably the closest rival.
You love this. Rolf Mamers, what's the range of your Ford panel van towing your 120i back from Malala? I'm guessing not good.
There's actually a really funny story.
Go on, we love a funny story.
Funny stories. All right, so I had this panel van, old XE or XD panel van, three on the tree or four on the column shift.
I was going to say, it's not perfect. Four on the floor.
No. Yeah, it's column shift. But it was great to take all the stuff away for the race car, and I decided to go to Malalar and do around there with the Datsun. So cruise up to the service station to get some gas, and all the Ballin boys or a few of the, I think was, yeah, Ballin Racing elements were there. So I've walked in there, got filled up with gas, walked into the service station, ended up having lunch with them and just walking out, getting my car and driving off, hadn't paid for fuel.
You badass.
Yeah,
didn't even realise it.
No, didn't even realise, just, airhead, driving down the freeway, windows down because I had no aircon, and I get pulled over by the cops. And they're like, you didn't pay for fuel. Oh, my God. You're kidding. I was just like, I'm so sorry. So they just said, oh, on the way back, yeah, make sure you fill it up. And he goes, I knew you weren't trying to get away with it. He goes, you sort of stand out with a big orange, big orange 120 Y on the back of the panel van. So they were cool. And on the way back, I went and paid for two tanks of fuel, and all was good. But that's why he that's that comment. Yeah.
All right. That makes sense.
Me driving off without paying for fuel. And you know what? I've done it a few times.
Before and
it's only when I bump into someone at the service station.
Too busy chatting.
Too busy chatting. Chat, you know, and then just
good to see you. All right,
in my car.
On my way.
Yeah, see you, mate.
Forgot to pay.
It's not an uncommon thing to do. So I don't know what it is, but yeah, done it a few times.
Another little question I'll throw in here because it sort of leads back to something you said before about the positivity and, you know, not really having a low light, getting paid to drive at Bathurst for the best part of 10 years. Are you content with your lot? Were you ever resentful along the way that, there's a bit of woe is me that can creep into motorsport over the period? Do you ever have that sort of moment?
I think there's definitely moments when you got down, don't get me wrong, especially when you saw guys that you were beating getting drives. That's reality. That's just, you know, you can't sort of get away with that. But it was frustrating, don't get me wrong. It was very frustrating. It was frustrating too when there was a couple of times when teams had been, oh, we're going to go and do a shootout. We're going to test three or four drivers. You go there, you're the quickest, and then they pick the other guy. Politics, connections, that made the difference. So that's where I missed out in that terms of I didn't play the politics game and all that sort of stuff. So that was my downfall 100%. Yeah.
Top 10 shootout, seen a few over the journey over the years. This is just word association. It's just a fancy way to put it. Tell me the first thing that comes into your mind when I say these following things. And you can't say the same thing twice. And if it's too hard to put in one word, use as many as you need. All right, you good?
Go.
Sandown.
Armco.
Tasted it? You tasted the Armco there or
No, just because it's surrounded I haven't, but it's I know plenty of people I have.
True.
One of my young kids who just bought a Hyundai off me. He in his brand new car, he found the Armco and
it wasn't brand new anymore.
No, we had to reshell it. But,
okay, that's very not.
Yeah. But I think that's why it came to me that way.
Yep, fair point. Bathurst.
Amazing.
Jason Bright.
Legend.
Formula Ford.
Best class to train real race drivers.
Nice. Mike Borland.
Genius.
I knew you were going to say that.
I think I said it before.
I think you said it before, so that's probably what we're going to go with. Larry Perkins.
Hard but fair.
Alan Jones.
Jesus, a long way. It's a long time since I've spoken to him. that's a hard one. Don't really know him that well. At the end of the day, he's an Australian icon, so.
Yeah,
F1 World Champion.
There you go.
It's probably our last.
Yeah, well,
it is.
We haven't quite squeezed one in since, so hopefully one day, Hyundai Excel.
Bang for buck. Great training.
Fair point. That's 9. Peter Macro.
Best dad anyone could ask for.
There you go. Well played. Mate, that's the V8 Sleuth Top 10 Shootout. You've covered the National Motor Racing Museum Catch Racer questions. We've covered some ground. We've covered a lot of years and a lot of cars.
We've done well.
A lot of racing. Mate, thanks for sitting down. It's great to come. We haven't seen one another in many, many moons. So,
I remember one more name that I went through my kart team.
Who?
Jaden Ojeda.
Oh, yeah.
So we won state and national titles together in karting. And then
this in before we finished.
No, and I got him involved with Borlands in Formula Ford. And then a lot of guys had come through for my kart team ended up going to Formula Ford with Mike.
Mm.
So So if I've forgotten anyone, I apologise. I don't want any phone calls. I am hopeless.
We'll put a disclaimer on
it. Yeah. I'll do a Facebook post later.
Yeah. Cover off all the ones. Mate, thanks for sitting down. I hope you've enjoyed as much as I did. We covered a lot of ground there. We've told a few stories that might not have been told before and gone over a bit of memory stuff from over the years that's been good fun. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thoroughly enjoyable to catch up with Adam Macro. I hadn't seen Adam for a long, long time. It was great that he came into the office a little while back and we sat down and went down memory lane on the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. Now, next week, who is the guest, I hear you asking? Well, it's none other than Craig Denyer. Now, he's more famous and better looking than his son Grant. Well, that's what he told me to say. We catch up with some ripping stories from his time around motorsport. Of course, he's largely considered one of the founding fathers of the V8 Brutes category, but later on alongside Billy West, he ran as the V8 Utes category for many years. We talk Pro Car, we talk Bathurst 24 Hour, his involvement with the Chickadee, Bathurst, Alan Grice, Graham Bailey, Commodore win, why V8 Utes ended, that's a great discussion, and what he's up to now, TA2, and a lot of other interesting stuff. I think you will really enjoy that episode. That's next week on the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. Now, thanks for tuning in again this week. I hope you enjoyed this chat with Adam Macro. We've got plenty more chats coming up before we get to the Christmas break, but we're already planning for 2023. If you've got some guest suggestions, maybe a topic suggestion, or even a question for a Q&A, send it to us via the contact page on the V8 Sleuth website. There's a link in the show notes. Right, that's me done. Enjoy your week. Join us next time for another episode of the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco.